last time, we talked about equal potential surfaces, also talking about the potential gradient, or basically the electric field can be gotten by taking the potential difference divided by the separation, okay, of the points that lie on these various equal potentials. Capacitors are devices which store electrical energy. Okay, essentially they store charge. Typically we think of them in terms of these parallel plates, though a real capacitor doesn't quite look like that, but that's the idea. I have two conductors that are separated by some distance, and in fact, if this is the distance that they're separated, and I have a potential difference across them, then the electric field that's in here, okay, is E equals VD. That just comes from this. There's my V, here's D. Let me just solve that. Okay. Charge is proportional to the potential difference across the plates. C is the capacitance. Okay. If I put some material in there instead of a vacuum, I'm putting in a dielectric. So we have that dielectrics can be determined using the dielectric constant. E0 is the electric field without the material inside, and E is the electric field once the material's there. E is no bigger than E0 typically, therefore kappa is greater than or equal to 1, equal to 1 for a vacuum. The capacitance depends on the surface area, so if you remember, these are really plates with some surface area. They depend on the separation distance. Epsilon 0 is just the permittivity of the free space. And the energy stored is 1/2 QV. And if I replace either Q or V using this relationship, I can come up with other relations involving the parameters. Okay, so those are capacitors. A capacitor is just one thing that I can put in an electric circuit. So in the next section, we're going to talk about electric circuits. And so here, everybody's probably familiar with it. You might recognize an electric circuit when you see one. Okay. Typical, we take some circuit elements, connect the battery to them with some wires, and we end up with an electric circuit. So there are various components, and there are some simple electric circuits that we can look at and determine a few things from them. So the first thing we look at are batteries. I'm not going to get into the how batteries produce potential differences. Okay, a typical battery, well, they take all kinds of shapes. But you could have a cylinder, one of your typical 1.5 volt batteries. Looks like a cylinder. Got a little nub on the top. Okay, and so we have just one version of a battery. Right? We have car batteries. Right? Typically, batteries will have a positive terminal and a negative terminal. In this case, the positive terminal is at the top, the negative terminal is at the bottom. If I put this in a circuit connected to some wires, okay, what will happen is that this battery will produce an electric field, and that electric field in turn would act on any free electrons in the wire, all right, producing what's called a current. So how does that happen? Well, this positive and negative really means that the positive terminal is at a higher potential difference, higher electrical potential than the bottom. So there's a potential difference established across this battery. We don't draw batteries like that in our circuits, so we often draw circuit elements with special symbols. So for a battery, symbol for a battery is that I have a long line and a short line. The long line is at the higher potential, the short line is at the lower potential. Okay, and so this is the depiction of the battery for a circuit element. This battery produces a potential difference. The maximum potential difference is called the electromotive force. It was given that name a long time ago before people actually knew what was going on. Okay, think of it as the force that pushes the current, pushes the electrons, but it's not force, it's a potential difference. All right, so the units are not newtons, it's not really a force. All right, so instead of that, we'll just call it EMF, and forget that force part, so that we're not thinking that this is really a force. It's not. It's a potential difference. It has units of, well, the same units potential difference has, but the units of potential difference, volts. Okay? So the maximum potential difference across the battery is called the EMF. And typically, the EMF has a symbol of script E for EMF. And so once in a while, you'll see that. Now, when I put a battery in a circuit, it may not deliver its maximum possible. All right, so I have a 1.5 volt battery, and I put it in the circuit. It doesn't always work, does it? As it gets older, all right, the actual potential difference goes down because there's actually an internal resistance in the battery, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the chapter. Okay, so those are batteries. Now, once I connect the battery to some wires, okay, so I could have wires. Typically, we'll draw wires like this. But our wires, as you may well know from the lab, okay, some of you have had, what are we doing in lab this week? Anybody have a lab? What are you, Ohm's law or something? We don't know what we did.
Circuits.
Something with circuits. Well, when you go in and see the wires, typically the wires do not have corners. Right, they're just these flimsy plastic coated wires, right? Colored. And there's black ones and red ones, but of course the electrons don't care what color the wires are. Right? And so the idea is that we can draw nice diagrams, nice straight lines and corners and things, but in reality they're just a big pile of spaghetti. Right? Have to somehow look at the physical spaghetti and think about this and how things are connected. So the idea is, here's the positive, there's the negative, and what happens is that this is going to drive a current, and we're going to write I for current. You thought it was going to be C. And what do I mean by current? Well, the current is defined to be the following. If I'm sitting here at a point, what I do is I watch over a period of time how much charge passes a given point. And so we're basically looking at the flow of charge past the point. So I look at this point, right, over some time interval, I count charges, and I compute the amount of charge that crosses in a specific amount of time, t. So that's what I define as the current. The units of current are what? Coulombs per second. So 1 coulomb per second is called 1 amp. Or ampere. All right, an amp is short for ampere. Ampere was the name of one of the several people that worked to understand electricity back in the 1800s. So, ampere has been honored, Faraday's honored, Ohm is honored, okay, a lot of people. Henry, we'll find out in a later chapter, etc. Okay, the other thing to note is the following. This is not the direction that the electrons moving. Right? This delta Q over delta T, that's the direction of positive charge. So one thing you could think of If the electrons are going in this direction, it may seem like positive charge is going the other direction. Now we have to be a little careful about this thought about electrons flowing from this point to that point real fast. When you throw on a light switch and all of a sudden, right, did an electron go from the light switch quickly up to here? And the answer is not really, okay? But unfortunately, we don't cover that in this course. One would see that in 202. There's more of a discussion about the drift of electrons and wires and what's actually going on. Okay, so we have in our mind these little pictures, right? Sometimes they're wrong pictures, like our picture of the atom that we see in chemistry is not right. It was 100 years ago this year, okay, that Bohr introduced his model. It was just a model, but Bohr's model of the atom with the little electrons going around in orbits and things like that, which he painted. Okay, that's not quite what's going on, but we're stuck with that anyway. Okay, so the same thing, we get stuck with some of these notions. But this current is in the direction of positive charge flow. This is called the conventional current. Okay? So conventional current refers to the fact that charge goes in this direction. Okay, because we didn't understand when we first started drawing these pictures, right? Engineers took over. Engineers didn't think like physicists. They thought like engineers. And so they said, we want current to go this way, not the direction the electrons go. So we're stuck with this. Okay? It's not that bad. The other kinds of things to think about is that the current is not necessarily constant, so this would be an average current in general. Okay, we have two types of current that we typically look at. One is called DC current. What does DC stand for?
Direct.
Direct current basically means that the current flows in one direction. All right, the way I've indicated here. It's just going that way. Batteries produce DC current. And then we have AC, and AC is?
Alternating.
Sometimes the current's going in this direction, sometimes it's going that way, right? We have an AC source that we can put in there that can change the direction of flow of current really quickly. So the current that comes out of the wall, for example, is coming out at 60 cycles a second. That means it's going like this, back and forth, 60 times in a second. All right? So that's pretty fast. And we can control some of that with our various devices. All right, so we won't talk about AC yet. It's coming, but let's just think about DC for a little bit. Okay, other times people like to make analogies, thinking about currents. All right, so we're thinking about the charge flowing like water flows. And so people think about how water flows in pipes, and they come up with these analogies, right? So if I put a high pressure at one end of a pipe, I'm going to cause the water to flow faster. Well, the idea of a high pressure basically is that the voltage across the batteries, if I increase the voltage there, I expect the current to increase. Okay? And so, greater goes larger. So that's the type of thing we expect. But just like with fluid flow, right? There may be something in there that would offer resistance. Pushing water through a big round pipe is a lot easier than trying to put it through a little thin pipe. Okay? And so we have the analogs here. Anything that offers resistance to the flow of current is called a resistor. Resistors resist flow of current. Well, flow of charge, actually, which is current. And there are all kinds of ways we can see resistance. Okay, there are some materials which behave simply when it comes to resistance, and these satisfy the following relationship: that the voltage is proportional to the current, and that proportionality constant is called big R. R is the resistance. Materials that satisfy this are said to satisfy Ohm's law. Real materials may satisfy Ohm's law, but maybe not for all ranges of potential difference. If I put a really high potential difference, I may destroy the material, for example. And so there are ranges for real materials in which this may hold. Okay, and then materials are called ohmic. Okay. Some people don't like that term because, you know, material is not ohmic everywhere necessarily. But many of the same resistors that you might use in the lab, they're little short things. All right, they come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. Way you can make the resistance is maybe take some wire and curl it up, and you're really pushing the current through a long piece of wire that you've just curled up, and a really thin piece of wire. So there are different ways to build resistance. Resistance here, if I went and solved for the resistance is the voltage per current, and so I could look at the units. And what are the units? See, voltage, well, that's just volts. Current, some amps. So 1 volt per amp is defined to be 1 ohm. And we have a special symbol for ohm, and it's not a capital O in Greek, but a capital omega. Omegas that everybody calls W's, but they're not W's, they're omegas. All right, well, this is its capital equivalent. All right, so you'll see ohms, you'll see units like kiloohm. So 1 kiloohm is how many ohms?
1,000.
Okay. So we can use circuit elements that are resistors. So I put a resistor, my typical resistors that we'll be using will assume satisfy Ohm's law, and if they don't, you'll be told otherwise. But they're a little harder to quantitatively do anything with when they don't satisfy Ohm's law. Okay? Now, as I mentioned, you could use a wire. In fact, real wires offer resistance to the flow of current. In many of the problems that we're going to do, we're going to assume that the resistance that the wire offers is small compared to any other resistors in the problem. But there may be times when we actually have to account for the fact that wires have resistance. Okay, so for long wires, wires have resistance. So I can think of a piece of wire. It has a length. And it has a cross-sectional area. Many of the wires that we know have cross-sectional areas that are circles, and so often you're given the radius, okay, of that wire. In which case, if you're given a radius, then what's the area?
Pi r squared.
Okay, so if you're given a radius, you should be able to figure out what the area, cross-sectional area is. So the resistance for such a wire turns out to be proportional to the length. The longer the wire, the more resistance it's going to offer. Okay, and so it's going to be proportional to the length. And it's going to be inversely proportional to the cross-sectional area. As I mentioned with the analogy for pipes, started to push water through a smaller cross-section. And so those are the main components that go into this. Of course, the other thing that's important is what the wire is made out of. Okay, platinum wires behave differently than copper wires, and silver wires, etc. So you need a factor in here that takes into account the material. Rho, that's not a P. Rho is called the resistivity. All right, I haven't actually put any numbers in anything today yet. So let's consider a piece of copper wire. In this section on resistance and resistivity, there's a table which actually gives values for the resistivity. Yes? It's just a constant. It depends upon the material. So you either have to look this up or you're given everything else and have to solve it. Okay, so it's a property of the material. For copper, it's one value. For platinum, it's another value. And in our book, in this section, there's a table that lists several of the values so that you can look them up. Do you need to memorize these values? What do you think?
No.
You don't. You just have to know what to do with them. Right, so I would give you the resistivity or ask you to find it and give another spot. Alright? So for a copper wire, the resistivity, for example, is 1.72 times 10 to the minus 8. And it has units. So let's think about what the units might be. What's the unit of length?
Meters.
What's the unit of area? So this looks like 1 over meters. I need to multiply this by 1 over meters to and have what left over? What are the units of resistance?
Ohms.
So I need something that if I multiply it by meters, I get ohms. I mean, multiply by 1 over meters, I get ohms, right?
Ohms per meter.
So ohm meters. I get ohm meters, divide that by meters, then I'll get ohms. So that'll have the right units when I put it in here. Of course, in the table, it's already there. Just a pause. So when you forget things, or if I had you solve for the resistivity, I have to remember what the units are, how to get the units, right? You just look at the equation, and you can figure out the units. Okay? So let's say I have a piece of copper wire. And I'll say rho equals, do it that way. Let's say this wire is 1 meter long. And it's 20 gauge. Well, why do I say that? Well, if you go to a hardware store and you need some wire, right, you have to order wire to wire your house, you're going to need something like 12 gauge or 14 gauge or whatever, right? They don't. It has to do with cross section. But they don't tell you what the actual cross section is. You really don't care, do you? Because these numbers, I remember the number, but probably you remember 20 and not what its actual cross section is. So somewhere you have to look up what 20 gauge is or can be given it. This is 5.2 times 10 to the minus 7 square meters. That is what the cross-sectional area would be. Now, if I divide that by pi, right, 3, that's roughly 2 times 10 to the minus 7. Take the square root, I can get the radius of the wire. And so that's less than, well, let's say that it's 16 times 10 to the minus 6, so that would give me 4 times 10 to the minus 3. So it's about 4 millimeters. That's pretty thick, 20 gauge. And I usually don't buy 20 gauge in a store. But anyway, so just an aside. All right, what do you think I'm going to ask? I haven't asked anything yet. Given this information, what's the resistance of the wire? are, so there's nothing really deep here. I'm just computing the resistance, and we'll see how big the resistance is. So R is equal to rho L over A. That's 1.72 times 10 to the minus 8 ohm times meter, which will cancel with the right meter over meter squared that we have here. The length of the wire, that's easy, 1. And then we divide by A, 5.2 times 10 to the minus 7. Okay, so as usual, 1.72 over 5.2, that takes care of my numbers. My power is of 10. I have 10 to the minus 8 divided by 10 to the minus 7, which is 10 to the minus 8 times 10 to the plus 7, which is what, 10 to the minus 1? And 1.72 over 5.2 is 0.33, did you say? Roughly. So that's 0.33, and there's another 1/10. So that's 0.033. Everybody agree that that's 0.33 times 10 to the minus 1? All right, because now, without doing any other work, you have no idea whether this is a big number or a small number, right? But often we'll see we'll have resistances in our wires. You'll have 20 ohms, 20 kilo ohms, well, 20,000 ohm resistor compared to this. This is negligible, right? So that's why lots of times we don't consider the resistance. I mean, that's a 1 meter piece of wire, right? So we got a meter. There's a few pieces of wire in the lab that are like that, but most of them are, you know, shorter. Maybe they're like this, right? And real circuits, they can even be a lot shorter. So this is the reason why, generally, we can ignore the resistance. Not always, because compared to other resistors in the circuit, this is really small. So that's part of the point. Okay, what other things can we do? It also turns out that the resistivity is not a constant. Okay, the resistivity can depend upon the temperature of the wire. If I heat a piece of wire up, we may or may not know that wires can grow in length. They can even grow in area, cross-sectional area. But for wires, it's more of a length. This is actually covered in the chapter you didn't do. And back in the first half of the text, right? In thermodynamics, they talk about the effects of temperatures on lengths of objects, especially metals. So the resistivity depends on the temperature. So let's say I have a piece of metal, and at a certain temperature, I know what its resistivity is. Okay, we'll say that that resistivity is given by rho zero. Okay, so you can think of that as the initial resistivity. If I heat it up, then it's going to change temperature. I mean, it's going to change resistivity by the following. Rho 0 times 1, that's just rho 0. So I'm going to say that it changes by a little bit. It doesn't necessarily change drastically over small temperature ranges. Okay, but it does depend on the temperature difference. So if I heat this up to some temperature T, from temperature T 0, then that's basically delta T. And depends on the kind of material. We know that if I heat wood, it's going to behave differently than if I heat copper. If I heat copper, it's going to behave different than platinum. So I need some constant in here, which depends, again, on the material. This is something that has to be looked up. Okay, alpha is called the temperature coefficient of resistivity. Again, it's something you get to look up. Well, if rho can change, then R can change. So if I take rho and I plug it in here, then we can find out that R depends upon the change in temperature, and I can take L over A and multiply through. L over A times rho zero is just R zero. So I could replace these rhos by R and get that R is equal to R0, 1 plus alpha. And let me write delta T. Much shorter to think about, as long as we understand that delta T is the temperature difference from T0 up to T. Okay, and so the resistivity as well as the resistance are temperature dependent. And this is useful to know because we run into these things lots of times. If you work with an electric stove, you know that when you turn on the burner gets hot. All right? Because basically you have electrical current going through a resistor, and that resistor, okay, is heating up. And we'll say a little bit more about how that resistors can get hot when you push current through them. Okay? And then the particular metal element, okay, could expand. All right? It could also change in its resistance. So back in chapter, I don't know, 12 or 11, or I guess it's chapter, might be chapter 11. But anyway, somewhere around 11 or 12, right, we would be measuring how much that stove element grew in size. Okay, but here we're not going to do that. Here we're going to look at the electrical properties. So here's an example. We have a heating element. Now let's say we have a big one. So if we take that heating element, I have it's strong and I can bend it. Straight piece, right? I can see that it could be as much as like a meter. So let's say that this has a length of 1.1 meters. And let's say it has an area of 3.1 times 10 to the minus 6 square meters. Notice these areas are pretty small. Right, 10 to the minus 6, this area is on the order of 10 to the minus 7. Okay, what else do I want here? Okay, and let's note that at 320 degrees Celsius, its resistivity is given. 6.8 times 10 to the minus 5 ohms. Now, one of the things I'm going to have to assume is that you know what Celsius is. Okay. Now, I haven't looked at the homework problems in detail recently. Okay, to know whether they actually give you things in Fahrenheit and you have to convert it. Typically, it should be in Celsius. Probably no need for it to be put in Kelvin at this point. So we may be safe without having to talk about that. But if you go back to like chapter 12, right, the temperature scales are gone over there. You need to look it up. Okay. Well, let's see. I know the resistivity. I know the area. I know the length. We could get the resistance. So let's see. Go through this again. Let's find the initial resistance, or the resistance at 320 C. So that's just R is equal to rho L over A. That's 6.8 times 10 to the minus 5 ohms. The length is 1.1 meter. The area is 3.1 times 10 to the minus 6 square meters. Well, I didn't mean to put that there, number one. Number two, there's a mistake on the board. I didn't write it down right. What's the mistake? Units. What should these units be? And I would have gotten that if I put all the units. Well, I did get it. Hopefully some of you got that. We're scratching your heads. Okay, so we divide the 6.8 over 3.1 is 3, what, 2 something, right? Times
1.1. 2.41.
2.41. Do we agree with that? What about powers of 10?
Yes.
So that's 10 to the minus 5 plus 6. So that's minus 10. So this is going to give me 24. Notice I only have two sig figs here, so we'll just leave it at 24 ohms. Right? Everybody agrees with the 2.4? All right, so. Well, 24 ohms is a little bigger than this was. Somewhat significant. B. Okay. All right, let's heat it up to 420 degrees C. Somehow, I figured out the resistance. So we heat this, and we find that this is true. What do you think I'm going to ask? What's alpha? This is where one of those cartoons would say, what is alpha? And I'd say, the first letter of the Greek alphabet. Okay, well, what is alpha? All right, so what do we have to do? Well, I come back to that equation, and what I have to do is solve for alpha. Do I put the numbers in here, then solve for alpha?
No.
Solve for it algebraically first. So let's see. Solve that equation. We take and bring the R0 over to the left. Then we subtract 1. And then we divide by the change in the temperature. So that gives me that alpha is 1 over delta T. write 8, put in some numbers. What's delta t?
100.
This is 1 over 100. I'm going to put in degrees. R is 29 ohms. R0 is 24 ohms. We'll notice that the ohms are going to cancel. And now I just need 29 over 24 minus 1. Which is
2.21.
2.21, or I'll leave it as
0.21.
0.21. I can say that's a little high. Alright, 0.21. Alright, so. Divide that by 100. And I get something like 2.1 times 10 to the minus. What? 3? What are the units? Right, 1 over degrees Celsius or degrees Celsius to the minus 1. You will notice values of alpha have these strange looking units. And that was part of the reason I did it this way. So that you could see these units pop up this way. As I've been known to ask questions like solving for alpha, and people getting the units wrong. Okay. All right, moving right along. So let's see what we've got so far. All right, so we know batteries produce a potential difference in a circuit. Right, we have a voltage difference here, typically V. Batteries produce direct current, and we have alternating sources of current which produce AC. The current is the rate of charge per time. So if I know what a current is, I know how much time I'm looking, I can see how much charge has flowed past. In fact, I can count the charge. I know that those were related to electrons, I could divide by the charge of an electron, right, and figure out how many charges have actually gone by. What else? I've introduced the idea that some materials offer resistance to the flow of charge and current. Okay, Ohm's law is the simplest relationship between the voltage and the current, which is satisfied by some materials. V equals IR is Ohm's law. We will get to know that over the next week. And you will get to see that in the lab. You will actually, I believe, confirm this in the lab as an experiment. Units of resistance are ohms, all right? Long wires offer resistance, and we can compute, okay, the resistance of a wire of length L and cross-sectional area A. And then we did a few computations, and we also have that resistance depends on temperature, or resistivity depends on temperature. Okay, so those are the key things that we've done so far today. Okay, another thing we can do is consider energy. So when I do put current through a resistor, this resistance, there's one resist and there's some energy loss. Okay, along with energy, one often talks about power. And so the next subject is electric power. Power is typically given by a capital P. There's a lot of P's in physics. Right? Momentum, power, pressure, okay, those types of things. What is power?
Work of the atom.
Okay, it's the amount of work that you've done for a time. Okay, or in this case, the energy per time. Or we could say the change in energy per elapsed time. Okay? And so we can look at the amount of energy. Now the idea is that I am going to take some charge, push it through the circuit. Alright, it's going to go from point A to point B. Say I'm pushing it through a resistor or a wire. Okay, then I'm looking at how much charge I'd push in a given amount of time. So in a given amount of time, say delta T, let's say that I've pushed delta Q through, but I pushed it through a potential difference. Right? Because, for example, if I disconnect the battery to some wires, there's a potential difference that's been set up. So what do I need? I need some potential difference, and typical letter B. So if I have a voltage difference in being set up by the battery, this is what the energy per time looks like. But what is delta Q over delta T?
I.
Current. So the power is equal to the current times the voltage. Again, if these vary, are not constant, okay, if my current changes, then what I would need are average values here. And we'll actually look at that in a little bit more detail. What about units? What are the units typically for power? Essentially, energy is given in joules. Time is given in second. 1 joule per second is 1 watt. Named after Watt, who studied engines and things back in the 1800s. So 1 joule per second is a watt. Okay. We'll also notice that current is amps, voltage as volts, so an amp times a volt is also a watt. And if you reduce these things to basic units, you can convince yourself of that. But you've already seen power back in the first half of the book, and you know that a joule per second is a watt to begin with. Okay? Now, if I have a resistor connected to a battery and I'm pushing through energy, there's going to be some energy loss. Okay, and let's assume that the resistor satisfies Ohm's law. Alright, so for a resistor, satisfying Ohm's law, then we note that I can take the power, which is IV, and Ohm's law, which I erased, V equals IR. I can plug in here an I. So V equals IR. So what do I get? I times I is I squared. So if I have a resistor that satisfies Ohm's law, the power goes like the square of the current. All right, this is the power loss in a resistor. This is how much energy is lost. If I crank up the current, I have more energy loss. All right, and people often refer to this as the I squared R loss over a resistor. Why? Because that's the power. Now, that's not the only thing I could have done. I could have, instead of replacing V, I could just have replaced place, I. So I is what? V over R. So if I come over here and put V over R, say or, V over R times V is V squared over R. So the power could also be gotten in terms of the voltage. If I know what the voltage and the resistance is, I could also find the power loss.
So these are all just for power loss, not for determining how much power there is?
Yeah, the power loss across the resistor.
Okay,
That's the energy lost across the resistor per time.
Okay.
Now one can actually realize this. If you take a really small resistor, and you start putting some current across it, you might feel it getting warm, right? You might even feel it getting hot. Okay. There was a place I worked at a while back that one of the things that we did in our Ohm's Law labs, one of the first things we did was we gave everybody a quarter ohm resistor and we cranked up the current and burned up the resistor on purpose, just to prove that you can, you know, these things are getting hotter and can be destroyed. In fact, that's what happens in some circuits, right? You're not too careful. Okay. So this is a real effect. Resistors can get warmer if you're not careful and even become destroyed. Now another place that power comes in, some of you may be quite aware of. Okay, anybody know what a kilowatt hour is? Where have you seen that?
On the electric meter, like outside your house.
Yes, you get a bill every month. Or if you don't now, maybe in the future when you have to pay your electric bills, you'll get these bills, and they tell you how many kilowatt hours they think you used. If the meter man read your meter right. Okay, and so this is kilowatt hour. So what is kilowatt a unit of?
Power.
What happens when I multiply power by time, hours? I get energy. Right. So this is kilowatt hours, which is just a weird unit of energy. Now why don't you just give me the, tell me how many joules I use. So kilowatt hours. So somehow this stuck. Okay? Because it's easier to compute from whatever they actually record. Okay, so those are useful. All right. Well, hold it held off long enough, I guess. AC circuits. Let me say a few things about AC circuits. Okay, as we've already seen, alternating currents are currents that alternate. Well, they alternate direction. Okay. The way we typically generate these things is that we may create a periodic oscillation. And this is easy to do using sinusoidal functions. This is not the only type of an oscillation you can have, but it's the simplest one we can write now. And so AC circuits, typically, when you have a circuit of an AC generator, instead of using the battery symbol, you would use something like this, and with a little squiggle on it. That squiggle represents a sine wave. Okay. And the idea is that this is providing a voltage which looks like the following. There's peak value of the voltage, and then you have something that takes care of the oscillation. And that something is sine 2 pi f t. Okay? So here's one of those places where we have to pull in some trig functions, right? Almost the most sophisticated mathematics that we do in this class. Okay? We all know what a sine function is. On our calculator. Okay? We know that it has something to do with the opposite side to the hypotenuse on the right triangle. Okay, but it's a little bit more than that. Sine functions are periodic, or they repeat. Okay? When I write this, I really mean that. I compute 2 pi ft, whatever these things are. Okay? And get a number and take the sine of it. There's no way you can take 2 out of here. You can't take the pi out. You can't take anything out of here. Right? You're stuck with that being inside the sine function. Right? I know lots of people try to do that, but it's not legal. Okay. If I were to plot this as a function of time, then I get to see, okay, what the voltage is. So let's see what this looks like as a function of time. And the vertical axis will be the voltage. If I put t equals 0, what do I get? 0. And then as I start increasing t, 1. When it becomes 1, what is V?
Yeah.
Just V0, right? V0 times 1. So wherever this goes, it's going to get no higher than V0. And so my sine function is going to increase, and then it's going to turn around. It's going to become 0, and then the sine can become negative. And how low can it go?
Negative.
Negative. So you guys know all this. Just to be on the safe side. Remind you. All right, so I can go, and it comes down, curls back up, and it becomes 0 again. And now, what does it do? It repeats. So this thing repeats and repeats, and therefore, what do I have? I have the voltage is going between minus V0 volts to plus V0 volts, and down and up and down and up, and it oscillates, okay, in time. This is known as the period of the wave, right? One cycle. How much time does it take to go through one cycle? Well, the amount of time it takes is when does this become 2 pi? Okay? So if I put a 0 in here, I'm down here. If the angle is 2 pi, I'm over here. If the angle is pi, I'm there. If it's pi over 2, I'm here in terms of the angle. So in order to figure out the period, all I have to do is take whatever the number is in front of the t, and divide it into 2 pi. So I take 2 pi and divide it by whatever's in front of the variable, t. Notice the 2 pi's go out, and I get 1 over f. Typically, we define the period with a capital T. Period has units of time. F is 1 over time, or cycles per second. F is called the frequency. So I'm going over some of this because I know we probably did not cover that in chapter 17 or 16. We probably didn't cover those chapters. Okay? But this is important to know. The frequency, the units of frequency are inverse seconds, cycles per second, or CPS, or hertz. Hertz was one of the people who was attributed to being the first to produce electromagnetic waves, radio waves, back around 1887, almost 30 years after they were predicted. And then the big fight afterwards with Marconi and others. And if you read the recent biography of Tesla, there's some nice interesting things in there about Tesla's contribution to all of this, and Edison and some of the fights, who stole what and whatever. Okay. But anyway, the period is given by T, the frequency is F. F, I can solve this. F is 1 over the period. So these are things that are useful to know. They're going to come up again in the class in other instances. So it's nice to know. So this is what one of these looks like, except the frequency could be like 60 cycles per second. So in 1 second, this could go, try to fit 60 cycles in there. Okay. So if I take and connect my alternating source to a resistor. Well, actually, I haven't even drawn a resistor yet, have I? All right. Preview of coming attractions, because we're going to be doing more with circuit elements coming up on Thursday. A resistor typically looks something like this. Okay. And so here I have a resistor. Here I have my voltage. My voltage is time dependent. That just means it's a function of time. It's generally not constant, right? That's my alternating current. So the question that we can ask now is, if I know what the voltage is and I know the resistance, and let's assume that this is the same old resistor that I used, for example, back here, that satisfies Ohm's law, then what can I say about the current? What does the current do in this problem? Well, let's see, V equals IR, so I can solve for I as V over R. So far it doesn't look too bad, right? But remember, my voltage is this AC voltage. So I have to plug this in for V, so my current looks like V0. R sine 2 pi f t. So that tells me that the rate of flow of charge per time also oscillates. And it oscillates like the voltage does. So not only is my source providing an oscillating voltage, but what it's doing is pushing the charge back and forth. Right, so the charge per time is going, sometimes it's going this way, sometimes it's going that way, okay, in terms of our conventional current, okay? And sometimes we might even write this as I0 sine 2 pi of t. If I were to plot this, right, this is just the same old sine function I have over there, except I have a different amplitude, a word I didn't really use here, right? The amplitude is essentially, you know, half the total distance that it's gone through, the voltage in this case. So this is the amplitude. Let's say my resistance is large enough, then what I could do is, along with this voltage, plot the current. So the current would go up, it would be zero at the same time, it would go down, it would be zero at the same time, right? So that could be a plot of the current on the same graph. Okay, but they go through zero at the same time, they peak at the same time, they just have different amplitudes, because of course the current has different units too, right? Current's in amps, voltages in volts. Okay. But that just gives you an idea of these two things behaving this way at the same time. Okay. Now if I make some measurements, right, you'll be playing with meters. If I take and go ahead and say, I want to measure the current, right? So I get my turn to the dial, make my multimeter into an ammeter, stick it in, figure out what the current is going through the wire, and what do you think? There's a dial. What's the dial going to do? It's going to change numbers 60 times a second, right? You won't be able to read it. Well, actually, that's not really what happens. What it does is, since it goes so fast, it records an average value. Okay? So the actual measured current and the measured voltage that we get out of here are not going to be these oscillating quantities, but they're going to be some kind of averaged quantity. Okay? And what I'll do on Thursday is start from there and tell you about those average quantities. And then we're going to move on and talk about what happens when I have more than one resistance in a circuit. What happens when I put a capacitor in a circuit? Okay. And what happens if I have a very complicated circuit? Those are the types of things, right? I could have several resistors. I could have like five resistors in there, put in a battery, and ask in a particular branch of my circuit, what's the current? Those are the types of things we're going to be doing. Okay?